Hello, everyone. It's Dr. Joanne Dahlketter with Performing Edge Coaching International, and this is August 13th, 2015, and today we're going to be talking about building self-confidence in your athletes, and that was, thank you, Michelle, for that suggestion. Yeah, and any of you that have suggestions for topics that you'd like us to talk about, please let me know. You can just let me know in our calls here. Suggestions or by email, because I want to make these calls really relevant to you and what you need. If you have a phone that's buzzing or whatever, if you could just turn off the sound on it. Or push *6 for muting your phone. Then we can get a better recording. For background, so we don't have background noise, that'd be great. Today we wanted to talk about self-confidence, and of course, calls are always, you know, second, fourth Thursday of the month, so we've got today the 13th, and then the next one will be the 27th. The main purpose of the calls, of course, is to answer your questions. So I know a couple of you wrote in questions for me, and let's see. Do you want? We can do those questions. Now up front, or we could do them after we talk about confidence. What do you guys? What do you prefer? Does someone have a burning question right now?
Hello, it's me.
Yeah. Hi, Alex.
Hi. If it were up to me, I'd rather go to my question, but I don't want to be too selfish.
Go ahead. Let's do the question first, and then we'll go to the training part. So go ahead, Alex. Yeah, why don't you? Thanks for emailing me your question, but why don't you just go ahead and say it?
Great. So basically, I have a meeting tomorrow with the head coach of the football team of a university nearby my house. And I had a chat with him for about maybe 15 minutes already. He seems to be a very nice guy. I'm trying to assess whether there might be a possibility of maybe coming in and providing some psychological or mental health help, I guess. So tomorrow I will be meeting with him again and his staff. So basically my question is, are there any particular key questions that will address the need for my services? So how can I entice them to see that, I think that sports psychology is really needed, and Alex may be the person that could be valuable for our team?
Yeah, that is a great question, Alex, and congratulations on getting that appointment with him. First, do you want to just share with, so everyone can learn, share how you got to know him, or got...
I finished my doctorate about 3 years ago, 4 years ago, and I was looking at the relationship between mental toughness and body awareness, and I need to collect some information on these two constructs, and I went to three different universities. One of them was Pace University, and so the athletic director was very nice and allowed me to to reach out to quite a few of the players, and I collected some data from them. And since then, for the past 2 years or so, 3 years, sometime every once in a while, I send them an email to see if I can have any possibility of getting together. But frankly, I never met him. I mean, we had phone conversations a couple of times and some few email exchanges, but that's it. I never had a chance. I never met him in person. So I write quarterly newsletters, and he's one of the recipients of the newsletter. And I saw that he opened it and read it. So when I did realize that, I thought that was a good opportunity for me to remind him again of my intention or idea do I want to reach out and meet him personally. And that's when timing sometimes is everything. And I can say, hey, I'd like you to meet the head of the football team. Maybe we can, he's interested in hearing people who have something to contribute to the team. Maybe he can provide something useful. And that was basically it. But I mean, it took 3 years.
And
perseverance. So anyways, I had a telephone conversation with him on Monday. He seems to be a very nice guy. He puts a lot of emphasis on process goals and team unity, and so he seems to be very much involved in this psychology of the game, much to my surprise, but normally football players, football coaches are very hard-headed, and they're not so much into the psychology, but are very much into the hardcore and do a lot of bench presses. But anyways, he seems to be embracing the soft side of the football as well. So I have a chance tomorrow to participate in the luncheon that he has with his staff, and the football players will be also having lunch. So I thought it'd be a good opportunity to at least put on the table that this is what I do and what I can offer. But before I did that, I want to gather from them first what their needs are. But once I have that understanding, then I can put my 2 or 3 cents on the table. So my question to you, Dr. Joanne, is what type of questions, what do you think I should be drawing from them so I can very quickly assess that particular need for psychological mental health contribution so I can put my 2 or 3 cents and hopefully something works out. So anyways.
Yeah, that's a great question. And you got to the to the head coach through, who is it, someone else on that?
Well, he's the athletic director.
Oh, yes, the athletic director, yeah. That's often, yeah, a really good person to talk to at a university is the athletic director first. So just for everyone's learning, that's great because the athletic director is kind of the, is in touch with all the coaches of all the teams, kind of thing, and they all respond to them. So that's kind of your, if you can get to the athletic director, you're on top of things. So, to answer your question, I think, as you say, you're right on target with saying you want to find out what the need is. So finding out what are the top, maybe ask things like what are the top three stressors that you
stressors?
Need to be stressors, or what stresses of your team members, stresses or stressors, either way, of your team members, what's holding them back from doing their best, that kind of question, and then. To get at the, and also you want to find out what they're doing well. So find out what their major successes are, what led to the successes in the past. What were they doing right? Because he may have known, we had a sports psychologist or a person in the past, and then we lost them, and weren't able to do as well. So they may realize, that was something that really helped, so now they could hire you. Find out what worked and then find out what changes are happening, what changes are happening on the team. Maybe there's a change in personnel or a change in the kind of the politics of the team or that they've got what kinds of players are they able to attract to the team? Those kinds of things, changes in, sort of team dynamics. They may be having trouble with, players getting along with each other or finding a good leader. Oftentimes on a football team, the quarterback is the, sort of official leader, but then there's other players that are the... can be leaders as well. So finding the, the sort of the unofficial leaders of the team. What other issues are media kinds of things. Find out, have they been in the media? Have there been any kind of, sometimes there have been, there could be negative reports to the media about the team, or if anything's affected them that way. You could ask them about financial, the situation with the financial support for the team. Sometimes they haven't got enough financial support from the school, or maybe they've gotten a new source of financial support, new money coming in that could help. And that's always good to know for you, if you think, in terms of funding and budgeting, if they have good financial support, then they know that they, hopefully they have funds that could, fund your services there. Maybe something you want to ask toward the end, or after you already know them, to ask about the financial part or money part. Really getting at their pain is the key for good questions, I think. What setbacks have you had? Maybe they, almost made it to the finals, but didn't quite make it. Ask him to tell you stories. If you can get him talking more, and find out his stories, his frustrations as a coach, that's really important. Things that he wants, maybe there's, he's feeling overloaded as a coach, and feels like he can handle the physical part of the training, but ask him, about the psychological part and what are the gaps there. What's the attitude of the current attitude of the team? The current sort of team congruence or that kind of thing. Is the team, really up? Or are they kind of feeling down? Maybe if he's seeking your help, it might be good to find out, what are the is there a negative attitude on the team, and what's the source of that? Maybe they had, it's kind of a change in change of team players. Sometimes ask if there's been injuries on the team recently. Maybe if their top player was injured, that can really bring a team down, and they're thinking, oh, we all of us depended on this one player, which is, oftentimes very true. But they, he needs to, find a way that you could help them to find a way to. This is all related to confidence too, is our topic for today. Being able to. By the way, can you hear me okay? Is the volume okay here?
Yes.
You can hear me? Okay, good. Thanks. If for some reason you can't hear or it's too low, just let me know.
Hi, Dr. Joanne. It's Amy. I just wanted to sign in and say hello.
Oh, hi. Thanks, Amy. Yeah. Thanks so much for joining us. Great. Yeah. We're talking with Alex's question here, who had a football team head coach at a university, the head of the football team, wanting to, what questions to ask him. So these are general questions that any of you could ask a coach from any team. I think you can really, all of us can benefit from this. Running off some different questions that you could ask. Asking about the coach about injuries and how that has affected the team. And then ask about this kind of team cohesiveness. How is that going? Has it been going up or kind of downhill? And that's something that each question, you could come up with a question, and then, the different scenarios in your mind and how you might be able to help that. Just talking about the mental aspect of the sport, of course, but not just being real general. I mean, of course, you want to, show that you are the expert in that area, and also you want to be able to be specific to their team needs. The more customized and specific you can be to their needs, the better. So if you can really tap into that, that is great to and address them specifically. You don't have to say the name of that university right now, but just say if it's, you know, University X, keep using that term. You know, we want to be, you know, I want to be able to help University X to, team Cougars, whoever, the name of the team, bring that in so that you make it specific to their needs, and find out what their goals are. I mean, that's really key. For this year, they might have a new, new chance to make it to the finals or make it to the championship, and so you want to and this is a good time for football. Finding out what their goals are, their aspirations for this year. Maybe they got a new coach or new staff. Go ahead.
Yeah, sorry. One thing about goals, what he had mentioned to me was that the goal was to win the conference.
Okay.
And what he noticed was that some players immediately embraced the goal, and some others were overwhelmed by it. They were too lofty of a goal. So maybe it's the issue of maybe confidence. Maybe your topic today may help to address how to build confidence on an individual and a team basis. I'm hoping that if you can address how to build confidence or how to address confidence, because that, in a sense, this is a team sport, and so they have to have a very solid confidence going into the game. Otherwise, it's very difficult to trust one another so they can do the best in the field.
So
I guess what your topic today may be very appropriate to help me address this particular issue that I find in other sports as well, when they are like a team sports, the issue of each individual having different confidence levels and how they play with one another or how they affect one another. Because one player may be very excited about the goals, and some others may be just too overwhelmed, or they believe that those goals are just not reachable or attainable. But that feeds off the rest of the team.
Right,
Hopefully maybe you can address this particular issue about confidence, not just as an individual player, but how the individual in a team sport can affect the others, and what tools or assessment can we draw on or do so we can address this particular issue and hopefully solve it.
Yeah, good. We can jump into that, the confidence area here. And just asking one open question to them, what interests you about sports psychology and about mental training? That's a good question to ask them.
So what's the question?
Just to ask them an open question, like what interests you about this area of mental training and sports psychology? As a coach, what interests you in this area of sports psychology, mental training, and how do you think it might help you? So that's a really good question. It opens it up so that you might want to ask that one first before you get into the specific areas or topics, because he can go right to the problem or whatever issues that he feels like he needs help in. Or asking, another way, what areas do you need help in? So opening it up right away. And so that, because you don't want to, with coaches, you need to be careful that you're not, they feel sometimes it's very territorial, and they, like the physical training part is their, that's their territory, and they may feel like they don't want somebody in mental training to take over their, what they're doing, and or so you want to say that what you're doing is, you know, focusing on the, you know, it's, say that you're what you want to do is complement what they are doing. And of course, the mental, and we know that the mental part and the physical part go together. It's hard to separate out the two. So you, when you're working in the mental area, it affects the physical training as well. But you want to, you know, be able to use their language and use whatever it is that he's saying, to use those words. Yeah, and say that you want to complement what he's doing. That you're an expert in the mental area. There's a little bit of background noise. If you want to just press star 6, if someone has background noise to so that we can get a clean recording, that'd be great. Thank you. And what they do. So what do we, I know a couple others of you had questions also. Adriana, you had a question about goal setting and also, and Rob or Amy, you may have questions too. But could we, do you want to ask that now, or do you want to wait till we do the confidence part?
Fine. I can wait.
Okay. Why don't we go ahead, and then I'll get to yours right afterward. Okay. Thanks. So let's talk about the confidence, and wanted to talk about different ways to that you as a mental training coach, or you can, and this also applies if you're working with coaches, like with Alex, that's great that you're working with that athletic coach or the coach of the football team. So I think first, you know, just to, it's good to kind of define the word self-confidence and self-esteem, I think, go hand in hand with each other, and it's, when you think of self-confidence or self-esteem, it's important to think of what we were talking about is acknowledging all of that athlete's abilities and competencies. And so you want your athlete to be able to assess themselves correctly, accurately, and still be accepting of who they are. So an athlete can, you know, look at their qualities, their abilities, their gifts, strengths and weaknesses, and be able to accept who they are. That's really a key area of self-confidence. And one way to think of it is having when you have self-confidence or self-esteem, it's a feeling of having respect for yourself and your abilities, and a satisfaction in yourself. So that's what we're talking about in terms of self-confidence, self-esteem. So as it applies to athletes, you want an athlete that has self-respect or self-confidence is respects themselves not as a person, but and as an athlete. So you know, you want to be able to have that self-confidence both not just as an athlete, but sometimes, you know, if you get injured or you can't perform right, you perform well, the self-confidence, self-esteem needs to come from within. From actually doing, you know, feeling good about yourself as a person, regardless of how you're performing as an athlete. And if you can help them build their self-esteem as a person, then their performance as an athlete is going to improve as well. And so the key is that this is self-confidence is really an internal assessment, an internal reading that, you know, should be measured internally by the athlete, and not just an external judgment made by, you know, a coach, a trainer, a parent, or other teammates, or by the media. Oftentimes, one of the problems is that people judge themselves or their self-confidence always needs to be fed by external sources, like their coach or their parents or someone else. And the strongest, the best self-confidence, of course, it's influenced by those things and what happens outside of us, but you want to have an internal sense of being okay, that you're okay yourself, regardless of what others think of you, because there may be times when everybody else has a different opinion, or you have to stand alone on something, or there's a half the team is thinking, feeling one way, and half the team's another way, and so you want to have that self-confidence, that foundation within yourself. Teach your athletes to have that inner strength, regardless of what others are thinking. So it's a athlete's, you know, self-confidence, self-esteem is really an internal measure of your self-worth, both as an athlete and as a person. And, whether you how much value you put on external comments or opinions or judgments of others, it's the key is to have that not be dependent on others' comments, but comments about yourself, but to be strong within yourself. So let's talk about how that, how some ways to be able to build your athlete's confidence. And I think there's many ways for nurturing their self-confidence or self-esteem. And for some athletes, they look to, trophies or awards, or they have to have a certain, run a certain time or win a certain game to be able to have that confidence. And I think that's one of the problems in athletics, that, coaches tend to place too much value on winning and not on just being a good, having that confidence first. So we want to have the athlete, develop that internal self-respect and recognition of their abilities. That's what builds your self-esteem and self-confidence. So here's some ways that I wanted to give you of to help with that process. One is to, a key area to be confident is that to not expect perfection with athletes. It never works. Most, you need to allow, have the athletes allow for mistakes. And you need to believe in your training, your abilities, your skills, and understand that mistakes are learning opportunities. So, if you're working with a young athlete, you're also, maybe working with the parents. So encouraging parents or coaches to support their athlete whether or not they perform optimally. And to, whenever mistakes happen, which they do often, of course, in sports, to be able to teach coaches and trainers and the athletes themselves that mistakes are learning opportunities, and give them a chance to just go for it and realize that, you are going to make mistakes and it's okay. That's how we learn. Sometimes we learn mostly by mistakes than anything else. So that's one area to help with confidence. Another is that dealing with that issue of fear and letting go of that. And most athletes, talking about mistakes, another area that's related to that is this area of fear. And I think most athletes really are afraid of looking stupid, afraid of being embarrassed, afraid of trying new things because they're afraid of making that mistake, or a fear of letting the team down, or not making the or making the play because it causes the team to lose an important game. Oh, my gosh, that's a really tough one. That can happen. But it's important to get to be able to understand that, as I mentioned before, the way to let go of fear is understanding that athletes will make mistakes and just allowing them to make mistakes and to help the athletes to lose their fear, to decrease the fear, and saying it's okay, to have that kind of forgiving attitude. And say when they do make a mistake, to help the athlete understand what okay, what did it, let's see, what did you do well here, and then what did you what can we improve on? And also, if it's a team sport, it may have been a team mistake. It might have not have been that athlete's to say to yourself, okay, what was your part in this? Maybe you were doing everything correctly, but the team or that particular maneuver didn't work well because it was a group thing that didn't work, and we need to work on the group. And so that can help build confidence as well, because the athlete realizes, okay, I'm just part of the team. Everybody needs, it's not just my fault, but it's fault is not a good, athletes often use that word themselves, but it's not a good word. We need to reframe it in terms of just learning process. And having the athletes understand that it's we need to work on this particular strategy, or visualizing what it is that they do want. Creating that new movie. I've talked about that in the past. Instead of when athletes make mistakes, they often replay the mistake over and over in their minds, and the body follows those mental instructions. But you want to be able to move to take the mistake, and then teach the athlete to close their eyes as soon as possible afterward, and then go back and say, okay, if you were to have to do this over again, how would you do it correctly, or how would you like to do it? And have them visualize that over and over, maybe 10 times, the right way of doing it. So they ingrain that, and they're actually, creating neurons in the brain, a new neural pattern that can help help them to do it next time right, and can build their confidence that I can do this right. I don't have to be stuck in this mistake. So that's another area, letting go of fears. And then just allowing athletes to play, to practice confidently instead of holding back. So the athletes, you want the athlete to believe in their abilities and their training, and know that they are ready for the game or the race or the event, can really help them. So you want the athlete to know and believe that they've done everything possible to prepare for the event, and that really builds confidence. Preparation is like the opposite of fear. The more you prepare for something, the more confident you'll be and the less fearful. I'll give an example, a personal example. I have a talk coming up I was invited to speak at the Commonwealth Club in San Francisco. And there's, if you know, there that's the largest public forum in the country, and there's one in every major city. And if you go to commonwealthclub.org and search on September 15th, you'll see my name there. I'm speaking on mindfulness meditation for sports, work, and life. And it's a really prestigious place to speak, but I haven't actually done any public speaking in a while. I'm kind of a little rusty at it, so I'm fearful at it myself. And it's only in a month from now, and I'm getting nervous, and those doubts come in. Am I going to be able to do this? I've been mainly doing my private practice here. I haven't been speaking publicly for a long time. And so what I'm doing is addressing it, just like we're talking about here, to build my confidence as a speaker. I'm doing everything possible to prepare for that event. I'm going to NSA meetings, which is National Speakers Association, and that's a great organization to improve your speaking. There's chapters in every city, NSA, and I'm also going to Toastmasters meetings, and those are really helpful in being able to speak, practice your speaking in front of a group, and get excellent feedback. So and there's Toastmasters meetings. I think there's 120,000 clubs throughout the country. They're huge, and so I'm contacting as many clubs as possible and speaking in three or four. I've already given three speeches, and I'm going to give six practice speeches before the Commonwealth Club talk. So that's an example, and it's, each time I do it, it's there's a little bit less fear, less anxiety, and more confidence. So that's an example of how I'm dealing with the confidence, being able to do everything possible to prepare for the event and really immerse yourself in it. So with athletes, that gives, when you're working with your athletes, you want to give your athletes a mental edge over the competition. If they're, you know, like with Alex with your football team, if you can tell the coach that, you know, other teams might not be using mental training or sports psychology, might not even have considered that, but if you can tell your coach that you want to work with that, you know, giving them these confidence skills will give your team a mental edge and an overall competitive edge over the other teams, then that increases the athlete's ability, belief in them, their skills and their abilities, and it'll increase the coach's confidence too. So the athlete's knowledge and belief in their own skills allows you to then be able to apply these the skills that are needed during the competition. And that kind of brings up the area of pressure that oftentimes athletes, you know, you get that comment, well, I'm confident, or my athletes can do it and can perform well in a practice situation, but then when it comes to the competition, you know, they fall apart. And so that's where you need to prepare for the sport, prepare for your event, but also prepare for the pressure. So if there's a way that you can have your athletes practice in various situations, you know, leading up to the high pressure situation. And of course, that happens naturally in football or volley. You know, Rob with your volleyball and Adriana with weightlifting and Amy with ballet and other sports that, you know, when you're in a competition, you usually start with the low-level competitions and then work your way up. But if there's anything, if athletes can do something to, the great thing about visualization and our mental training is we can simulate those higher-level competitions in your mind. So you can practice the high-pressure competitions in your mind, then you'll be able to, you know, simulate those situations. So you want them to do it mentally, practice, and then also practice physically. Maybe sometimes I know some coaches actually have, you know, will play sounds of a crowd cheering to simulate, you know, being in a big field, or play a sound of a crowd booing, you know, booing and saying, you know, having a negative energy to help the athletes to be able to master a situation where they're playing, let's see, you know, at an away game and most of the audience is not on their side, but the other side. But simulating that situation can really help. So it's not letting athletes make mistakes, letting go of fear, and being able to play on their own, just play freely instead of holding back. And then another area to build confidence is to really help coaches and parents to look at each athlete individually, the athletes themselves, have them not to look at themselves, not make comparisons between themselves and other athletes. So this is really a key area that coaches and parents need to look at each person as themselves, that each person is a valuable asset to the team, and each athlete needs to understand the value that they bring to the team. So, you know, one exercise you could do with athletes is have them go around the room in an exercise and say the value that they bring to the team, or have other athletes, you know, say, you know, pick each one person and then have everyone else say what are their the value that person brings to the team, and then go to the next person and get feedback from others and have them only talk about what value they bring to the team, what skills they have, they feel that person has. And it could be, you know, their athletic skills. Within that, of course, there's all kinds of things. You know, say they're playing soccer, it could be their kicking skills, their passing skills, it could be also their ability to communicate, their ability as a leader, their personality, being able to get along with others, cooperate with others, keeping the team up, all those things can be value that athletes bring to the team. So being able to have them list those for themselves and then for others, that can really build a team cohesiveness. And then one thing that really helps build confidence, too, is to encourage athletes to play make sure that they are playing and training for themselves and not just for others. A lot of times with young athletes and even older athletes, too, there's, that peer pressure and social approval. Sometimes that's why people play, is to be popular, or to be liked by others. And it's important to help the athlete realize that their athletic performance does not define who they are. It's just one dimension of who they are. So it's helpful to, build that confidence from within for all the different things that athlete does. So that an athlete's performance is one part of who they are, and so not to just look at peer pressure or social approval. It's like when I work with sports that are judged, like gymnastics or ice skating. Afterward, you want to ask the athlete after they perform to, before you get your score, just close your eyes and do an internal check of how do you feel that you did yourself? How did you perform before you get that external, the score of what you did? Just rate your own effort level. And this is helpful in any sport, even in sports like track or field, where you're actually, getting a time to be able to rate your effort level yourself. So that even if you didn't do the fastest time, run the fastest time that you could, you rate yourself as, okay, I did the best I could for that day. My body helped me to get through this. Or I did the best that I was, and then rate their confidence level from 1 to 10 for that day. So that you're able to, rate their internal effort as opposed to just being defined by what other people think. So that's another area to play for yourself and not for others. I think one key area too is to just really focus on, as I was just mentioning too, the not only the results, not only going for the win, but the process. What is the athlete learning? Focus on the process of each individual. You're talking about a tennis player. The focus, what's the process of each individual serve that they're doing? Or the athlete, you want to be focused in the moment and blocking out the distractions. So you want to be relying on your training and your skills and your ability. And that's what can build confidence is coming back to, having that focus to building your skills, telling the athlete to focus on what it is, the task that they're doing right now, that can, so that they're not thinking about what if I don't win the championship, or what if this other player shows up, or all the what ifs, but they're focusing on what can I do right now. And you can have them make that list of what things they cannot control, and then like the weather, the other competitors, what their coach thinks, all of that, and then make a list of things that they can control, like can control your attitude, your effort, your how much you focus on what you're doing, all those things, how much you practice, focusing on those areas. And then one other thing to work on, and this is really key for us as mental working in the mental training area is to work with the athletes, and if you're working with a coach or parent, work with them to develop and build the whole person. You know, Amy, I think you were talking about that earlier, too, with the program that you were doing. Looking at the whole person, that's what can really build that self-confidence. Not looking at not only themselves as an athlete, but have self-respect for that themselves as a person. And the athlete that has respect for their athletic skills is going to be an athlete that has good self-esteem from within. So helping them to work on, hone their abilities in all areas, that'll help them to continue to nurture the, you know, your athlete's self-esteem. So it's our role as performing edge coaches to, you know, develop and nurture that athlete's self-esteem, not only as an athlete, but as a person, too. So you could tell, you know, like if you ask Alex, if you're working with your coach, your athletic coach or football coach, or any of you that are working with other areas, you can tell them that you can help the athletes to feel better about themselves, have that self-confidence within, and that's going to help them not be self-conscious and not worry about what other people are thinking, but be able to have the confidence from within so that then they can handle any situation that comes up, anything that they can do. And that's going to help them make better decisions in the long run. So those are a few things. I've got many more areas that we can help develop with confidence, too, and but wanted to check in with all of you, and we could do another part two to this on our next call on the August 27th as well to get into this area of confidence more, too. But I want to reach out to you, and Michelle, you're on the call, too. I forgot to acknowledge you, that you're thank you for suggesting that topic of self-confidence is a great one. So let me know what areas that you how your response to this, or any questions you have about self-confidence or other areas.
Dr. Joanne, this is Amy. I'd love to hear a few more exercises that we could use with our athletes and teams. I've been doing that one exercise where, you know, I feel strong when, I feel weak when. But if you have any other ideas of specific exercises that we could use with our athletes and teams, I'd be really interested in hearing some of those.
Okay, great. That one that we've talked about, I think affirmations or power words are really important to build confidence. So the way to develop those, too, is to do that sheet, have athletes take a piece of paper and write a vertical line down the center, and then on the left-hand side write their self-doubts and their negative thoughts, and that's what's hindering their self-confidence. So they might write, I'm afraid of looking stupid or afraid of making a mistake, those kinds of things. Have them be really specific about what it is they fear on the left-hand side of the page, and then for each one of the negative thoughts or self-doubts, which is hindering their self-confidence, then on the right-hand side of the page, write their confidence words, and you could call it, and so you have them counteract or counter what they've written on the left-hand side, and you could call them confidence words or confidence phrases. So when they say negative, I'm afraid of making a mistake, you're afraid of getting embarrassed or looking stupid, then ask them, okay, what do you want to be thinking, or what would help you get through that? They might, and write it in terms of, with an I statement and in the present tense and being positive. So they might write, I'm growing more confident every day, or mistakes are a way of learning. I get even stronger. I get a better athlete after making a mistake and learning from that, something like that. So mistakes are my friends. whatever it is, have them write three to five confidence words for every one of their self-doubt words on the left-hand side. And then you can take those, that whole list of the confidence words after they've developed that, and make that into an MP3 visualization for them. You could do it with an individual if you're working with an individual athlete, what they put, and only then on the audio only put the positive confidence words, don't include the negative ones on the left, because you don't want them to repeat those, of course, but include the confidence words and say each phrase two times so that they really internalize it. So that's a really good one for, and then you could also do a group one, a group visualization. Do it right there in the room with them, with the team, and then as you're doing it, you could be recording it so that they have it as a group. So you could do it as a group exercise and have have a whiteboard or a blackboard in front of you, let's say, and have people in a group call out, okay, what are your negative thoughts, or as a team or as a team member, what are your self-doubts, what keeps you from confidence, sort of confidence killers, you could call it, the things that are keeping you from your confidence, and have them list those things that they're saying or the things they're afraid of. So put them on the board there so everyone can see. So it's a kind of a group brainstorming. And then on the other side, the right side, let's see, what for each one of those, how could we counter that? So you come up with some really great creative answers, I think. Other people will come up with things, and it can almost just be a contest. How well can we counter the confidence killers? You could even make it a game and have people on the left-hand side of the room say the confidence killers, which are the kind of fear, things they fear and things that they worry about, and then have people on the right-hand side of the room say, okay, you guys are the confidence quest or confidence builders, and have them come up with something to counter that, the confidence killer, and come up with all these other phrases on the right-hand side. So you write those down. It can be like a little contest or a way that people can, it can be really fun that way as a group process. And then take the ones on the right and just make those into, right there in the room, you can do a visualization, just repeating each of the confidence builders phrases two times to the group, have them close their eyes. And you could just, even if you have an iPhone or any device, most iPhones or any kind of smartphone has a way to record your voice on it, so you could just do it right there in the room with your mobile phone. And then you can, I don't want to go into the technology of how to get that, but you can just record it, and then basically record it and then email it to yourself. And then email it to the whole group, or make it into an audio that everyone could use. Email it to the coach, and they could email it to the whole group, kind of thing, if it's a group thing. So yeah, that's another exercise. And another thing you could do is write down confidence experiences. Write down things. Say top five confidence experiences, things, times when I felt confident, and have them write, explore those, write them down and share them with the group. And one way to do with a group working as one good format is have everyone explain what the exercise is and the purpose of it, and then have everyone write it down, what their, say, experiences are, and then have them, either you can have them pair the group off and into ones and twos, and have one person share with the other partner what their top experiences are, And then just talking about your confidence experiences, I think, really helps to remember those and to talk about what were the qualities in those, what made you feel confident in that experience. Okay. You know, and then have so person A talks to person B, and then after 2 minutes, you know, have them switch so person B talks to person A, and then back, and then you can have them share after 2 minutes, have the whole group share what they learned from their other person. So that's another exercise. And then if you go to the this time, well, I'll put in the book, in the Your Performing Edge book, there's that assessment exercise in the chapter on self-confidence. In the Your Performing Edge book, if you go to it's the chapter 9 called Confidence Boost and Self-Image Building, it's on page 93 of the Your Performing Edge book, so you can go there and look at the self-assessment tool that I created there. And I'll also put it in, making a note here, I'll put that in our next email to you, also in a digital form here, to put that self-confidence exercise in there so you got it digitally, and then you can just, you're free to change it, customize it for your particular sport if you'd like to. So that's another one you could do, have them do that self-assessment tool that I have in the book there. And with that, you could have each person fill that out and then share, or if you're working with an individual, you could have them bring it back into you, or you could just do it verbally and talk with them about it. So there's questions like create a list of strengths and assets, a strengths list, and I think that's really important. Or you could just do that as a separate exercise. List your physical attributes, your accomplishments in all areas of your life. List your character strengths and the qualities that you appreciate in yourself. Mental, physical, emotional, your work, social, family, financial, lifestyle, all those things, your accomplishments. So just having a person list their accomplishments is really important, I think. Even if it's small things, just like helping out a friend with, their injury or something, that can be an accomplishment. It doesn't have to be huge things. So just having each of those could be separate exercises, just making your accomplishments list. And then listing what you enjoy and so, with their qualities, an example would be I have a strong drive to perform well, or I'm an easy person to get along with, or I have a strong character, I'm well-rounded. Those are kind of examples of qualities to list, both as an athlete, and think of it as an athlete and as a person overall. So that's one exercise in itself, I think, that you could do, just list those strengths and assets. And then the second exercise would be, list the qualities that you'd like to improve. So, but do it in a non-judgmental, just accurate way, so that your, areas for improvement. You think about your sports performance and your personal and work performance, as well as general personality characteristics. So, something like I lose focus halfway through an event. And I want to regain that focus back. So those kinds of things would be another exercise that you could do. Just answering those questions that are in the chapter there of, at the bottom, rate yourself 1 to 10 in confidence. Do you have a high expectation? You'll do your best in training and competition. Do you have get excited about the area of accepting a challenge, and you can have them rate yes or no, or rate from 1 to 10. Do you have feelings of strength and being in control? Do you like yourself? Are you satisfied with your current level of sports performance? So those kind of things can help to people to gain confidence. Another thing you could do is another exercise is just kind of a confidence challenge where another good exercise, let's say, you know, you have one, again, you could divide the group into half and half, or you could just have each person share something, is share like a confidence challenge, something where they felt like they didn't, you know, had self-doubts and had, and felt weak, share a situation. One person shares the situation, and then ask the others in the group to solve the problem, do, you know, like a problem solving, and ask, okay, how could this person increase their confidence or get through this? And by helping someone else improve their confidence, that's one of the best ways that we learn. You know, there's that old Chinese saying, see one, do one, teach one. So if you see someone else, you watch someone doing a skill or being confident, that's the first level of learning. And then do one is to do it yourself, that become, you know, more confident in a situation yourself. And then the third level of learning, the highest level of learning, is teaching it, teach it to someone else. That's when you learn it really well. So if you can have a group, you know, do a confidence challenge where that one person shares a tough situation where they did not have as much confidence as they'd like, and then have everyone else do confidence building or problem solving, and share a brainstorm how this person could get through that situation and increase their confidence. Then that's one of the best ways that they could learn it themselves when they're actually teaching someone else or they're solving a problem. And so, and you could do that with the coach there. If the coach is there, ask the coach or the person to present different scenarios, maybe a confidence challenge. So this is another offshoot of that same exercise, is having the coach say, okay, here's a scenario. You know, we got the other team. We're down, let's say, volleyball for you, Rob. We're down 5 points, and the other team is killing you, and or they've discovered a hole in the in our team, a weak point. So that's the scenario. Now, how do we let's brainstorm here quickly to solve that, and have the group do like a brain sync, a brainstorm, and work together to solve that problem. So come up with maybe, you know, 5 or 10 different scenarios. And then say, okay, how are we gonna solve this problem? How are we gonna increase our confidence in the moment, right then, to handle that situation? So those are some ideas for you, Amy. Is that helpful?
Yes, that was really helpful.
Yeah, good. Thanks for the question. Yeah, that's great. Even to make it more exciting, you could put a timer on it. You know, we've got 5 minutes to solve this problem, or 1 minute to solve this a confidence quest, you could call it. You know, make it a clever name, make it a game, and that way people, you know, kids, it makes it more fun, it makes it a learning situation. And sometimes if you solve someone else's problem, or increase that, you can, you know, it's easier to solve someone else's problem than our own. And often if you come up with enough scenarios, or the coach does, you can work with the coach or parent to come up with different scenarios, then you'll end up coming up with most of the ones that the client would have. Then they can start to solve their own problems as well. And if you're just working with an individual client, then have them be both sides, you know, be the present their own scenarios, an if-then kind of situation. If this happens, this confidence challenge, then I could do this, you know, do this is a confidence builder. also come up with like 5 or 10 if-then situations so that they know what's going to happen. Same thing with, you know, come back to the a business example. With that, it's, I was mentioning I'm going to be giving this talk with the Commonwealth Club in a month from now, and I thought of one thing I'm doing to prepare for that is come up with the 10 toughest questions that that the audience might ask. So this is good for any of you who are doing speaking as well. You don't want to look stupid. I don't want to be looking stupid not being able to answer a question or not knowing anything about it. So I want to come up with, 10 toughest questions that people might ask me, and then make sure I can answer those in some way or research it ahead of time so I know what's coming. That's a really good exercise. You know, if you put that in the athlete situation, come up with the 10 toughest situations or scenarios, confidence breakers, and then come up with a way to build those. So great. So thank you, Amy, for that question. And Adriana, I hope you're still there. I know you had a couple of questions.
Yeah, I am. I actually have my call with her in like 45 minutes. She's competing in nationals for weightlifting and qualifier for worlds. So I guess my question was, what exactly? I know we've talked about before, like before competition, it's good to go through like different scenarios.
Uh-huh.
But what exactly does that entail? As far as like, do I ask her like, what if this happens, or do I make a visualization MP3, or like, what exactly is like the best to talk to an athlete right before a competition?
Yeah, that's a great question. So just 45 minutes before or something, or a few minutes before?
Yeah. She calls me in at 11, so.
Oh, it's coming right up here. Yeah. Are you going to do a call with her?
Yes.
So I'd say just first ask, how are you feeling? Maybe rate your, like in terms of nervousness, 1 to 10. And just first ask, what can I help you with the most right now? So kind of be first ask open-ended question, as opposed to going in and saying, let's do A, B, C. Find out where the client is and say, how can I help you most right now, and what are your concerns, and let's so we can address those. Sometimes they just want to hear your voice. it's like, oh my God, I'm scared. A confident voice. Sometimes if they're really, often what you might hear is, I'm nervous. I don't know if I can do this, or so-and-so's here. I didn't expect her to show up at the competition or that kind of thing. And so, one of the best things you can do too is just reminding the client of, if you've been working with her, reminding the client of all the progress they've made.
Okay.
Because if you have a history of knowing what they've done and if they've been making progress, I've observed here, we started here and now you're here, you're in a much better place, and that you can do this. If the client's been through this before, just tell her to, you can say to yourself, I've done this hundreds of times before. I've done this move, this type of weightlifting many times before, and this is just just one more time kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of having like that practice mindset I talk about. So a lot of people think, oh God, this is nationals or this is worlds, and think, oh, this is totally, in their mind they might be thinking, this is totally different, or this is so much pressure, more pressure.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can make it familiar to them and tell her that it's, you know, keep that practice mindset, telling yourself this is just like practice, this is familiar, I know how to do this, this is, you know, I have, in, you know, if you can ever make a list of strengths or tell me what you feel, or, you know, ask her to tell you right there, you know, what's gone well this past week, and not to focus on the, you know, athletes tend to focus on the mistakes or the setbacks and say, oh, man, I screwed up this last week with this and this and this. And then just say, with that, I would say just, yeah, that's true, and, you know, it's okay to acknowledge that. Let's just, for now, you know, you've got your competition coming right up here. We'll deal with that part later. So just imagine putting that, those issues in a filing cabinet. You know, just put them in a file folder. Just, you know, even have her close her eyes and say, just put that in a file folder for now, and we'll work with on those afterward. And just imagine yourself putting them in the file folder. You're opening up the file cabinet and putting it in its file there in its place, and then closing the file cabinet. And it's amazing how that, just that simple little technique, helps people to say, okay, it's there. You know, I'm not ignoring those issues, but I'm just putting them away for now, and then say, now tell me, let's go to what's gone well here this past week or this week, and what's good, you know, ask what's good about this situation right now. So just really lead the person to ask what is good about this, the situation, and, you know, a lot of times athletes want to look at the worst possible things that could happen, but if you can really, I encourage them to look at what's good about this situation. How can I use this to my advantage? You know, thinking what's the best, you know, calm. And then just a lot of athletes just want to calm their mind. You know, reminding that you know how to do this. You've done all the training. And now it's just a matter of just calming your, you know, being able to calm your mind, take a few deep breaths. I think if you can remind the client to, you know, to keep, you know, just breathe deeply, you know, right there in that session there while you're talking to her, breathe deeply. You know, just doing that will help calm the mind. And then a reminder right before doing her event to take 10 deep breaths. And even just say to yourself, you know, simple exercises. People want to, you know, keep it simple during that time because you probably know what, your body knows what to do, trust in your training. And keep it simple. As you breathe in, say to yourself, I'm breathing in. And as you breathe out, just say, I'm breathing out. You know, just... and if you just say that, it gives your mind something to do other than doing the worry. Or you can say to yourself, I'm breathing in strength, and I'm breathing out the stress. You know, those two things give your mind something to do. Is that your kids in the background? anyway, yeah, that's good. And then, is that helpful? Or
yes, it was.
Yeah, and then you can make her an MP3 right there if you want, a visualization, and just imagine her best, you know, a time when she was feeling really good, competing or in practice, and good. And then I think if you've done that success anchor exercise, or you could just do, you know, imagine, you know, let's create a success anchor. You could have her do that right now. Just say which is a color, shape, a word, or a physical gesture works really well. So imagine when you were feeling really good and create a success anchor for that, like a fist pump or hands in the air or something, or clasping your hands together, something to associate with that feeling of the time that she did her best. Then right before she goes out on to compete, you know, let's say it's a fist pump, you know, just have her do a quick fist pump right there. And associate that, maybe say, I can do this, or a simple phrase. You know, have something simple she can do to and say, I'm okay, everything's going to turn out just fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, great. So hopefully that's helpful there. And if she has also a log book or something that is where she can see, what the progress she's made, then you can have her look at the log book and say, especially if she's made progress, say, look at your progress here so you know that you're on track. Say to yourself, I'm on track to do well here. And this is just a reminder that a competition is just a celebration of your fitness. Use it as to smile, breathe, and celebrate your what you can do.
Awesome.
So,
thank you so much.
Okay, great. Thanks. Yeah, it's a great question, Adria. Yeah. Other questions? You guys at Rob or Michelle? Do you guys have questions as well?
I'm good, Dr. Joanne.
You're good?
Yeah.
Okay, was that helpful for the confidence part?
It was fantastic. Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
We
just got started with that topic, and I think I've got a lot more to share with that next time. So we'll do that on the next call on the 27th, too, do a part two for confidence because there's so much in that area and share some different scenarios. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, how about you, Rob? What kinds of things? Or can you share any situations where you've had athletes that need more confidence or want to work with that area? Or anything else, just general questions is okay, too?
Well, I had a question I think I emailed you or texted you about pricing, but that's probably for a different day or a different conversation.
That's right. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, that's great. We can open this up to any kind of questions. Yeah, thank you for reminding me of that. So you were asking what to charge clients, is that right?
Yeah, because I don't want to undercharge, and be hurt that way or overcharge and scare people away. So I was just trying to get a ballpark figure of what people charge, like for the initial session or things like that. So.
Yeah, great. Well, thank you so much asking that here, and thanks for reminding me. So. So the good news is, too, that in our field, it's wide open, there aren't that many, people working in this field with sports psychology and mental training, so it's not like you can go on, go to buy a certain kind of chair, you see the price range here of this chair or this or doctor's office services, this kind of price. With in sports psychology and mental training, it's really wide open, so you can charge whatever people will pay. So there's no right or wrong, but I can give you some guidelines and some experience how I did it. It's always better to start lower and then build up. So that you increase your chances of getting more clients, and so when I started many years ago, I charged first I charged I guess $75 for an hour session, just kept it at that one rate. But often the first session you can charge more for because I usually spend more time. Instead of an hour or 50 minutes or an hour, I'd go for an hour and 20 or hour and a half because you want to spend a lot of time getting a good assessment of what's going on, and you're also building a rapport and setting up a plan for them. So I would say it's good to, at first I charged $95 sounds like a lot less than $100 an hour. It just psychologically, even though people know that that's near 100, if you charge 95 or 97, it's that's better in their minds. It's funny how that works, but we tend to think along those lines. Just like the gas pump is $2.99 a gallon sounds a lot less than $3 a gallon, and that's the way we work psychologically. So that, you know, I'd be charged like $95 for the first initial session and then $75 for each session after that. So I started out doing that, and that was fine. And then after a while, I moved it up to $150. You can move it up gradually, $125 an hour, and then people paid that just fine. And then I moved it up to $150 an hour. So you can gradually move your fees up depending on how you're doing. And then what I did was changed it to a monthly model and said, charged $600 a month for four sessions. So instead of getting just $150 each session, would say it's a 1 month. You could say it's a 1 month commitment or 2 month commitment, you know, to get started with a person. And that way, they would write me a check or do credit card or cash for say the $600, and I get a better level commitment that way. I was clear that it's that covers four sessions, four 1 hour sessions, or a month, depending on which comes first. So if sometimes the client might want to do two sessions in a week, if they do two sessions for 2 weeks, twice a week, then that would be, $600 would cover just half a month, and then they would they would pay again. And the key is to, in our field, is to, charge them up front, and that's a wonderful feeling, I think, to not just say you're going to bill at the end of the month kind of thing, because then it's much easier and more cleaner and better for you to say you get payment in advance for either for that one session or for all four sessions, so that you are clear that the client is clear that they're what they're paying for. Because if you've done the sessions and then you say forget to bill them, or afterward it gets to be more messy and harder to get paid. If you wait till after the session. So always make sure that they pay you in advance, and that way everything's clear and you're much, it's much better for you as a practitioner as well. So so I charged $600 a month, and then that was going well for, and then after a year or so, I moved it up to $795 a month. So basically $195 an hour, and that was fine. People were paying for that. So then I moved it up to $995 a month for four sessions, and so that's what I currently get now. So it's $250 a session. So I know that might sound like a lot, but it's it depends, It depends on also where you are, the geographic location. In some sense, if you're seeing clients just locally in your area, then it depends on the, how well that area is doing economically. The Bay Area here is doing very well economically, so people are willing to pay higher prices. Some areas in the country might be more depressed, so they might not be willing to pay as much. But the good news about our field is that you can, you don't have to be defined to one geographical area, and that you can work globally and work with clients anywhere in the world. And I have clients all over the world work with by phone and with by Skype, and because Skype is free, so anyone can. You can work with anyone, anywhere. So, in that sense, you're not defined by one just economic area or geographic area. And so, certain countries are doing better than others. I know Canada's. Michelle, your country's. Well, I don't know. I guess countries go up and down, but it seems like certain countries are more open to sports psychology, too. Like the U.S. is, generally really open to it now. I think it's a great time for sports psychology. And Canada, people are really open to that as well. And in Europe, and as we get closer to the Olympics, it's a really exciting time. Brazil, the Olympics will be in Brazil next year, so there's lots of athletes that want to try to qualify, at least get into the Olympic qualifiers. for all the different sports. So it's a time that, you know, parents will pay well for their clients, you know, to try to make the Olympic qualifiers or Olympic team. And so, you know, that's exciting too, this time. And so in terms of, yeah, payment, it Rob, it's a great question, and I think it's the good news is that it's whatever the market will bear. And so as you getting the certification, I think, is really important and really key for your credibility. And then you can, and being on these calls is really good for all of you, you know, for us to keep up with the field and to know what is important. And the bottom line is the value, you know, people will pay for value, for the value you bring to them. And so, and also people will pay for solving their problems, and for if you can get at their pain, what it is that they need and what's bothering them the most, and really find out their one specific problem you want them to solve, then they'll pay you really well for that. You know, in everything you do, your website and your marketing and the way that you talk to clients, you know, really think about, listen to their issues on what they're asking for on a really deep level. Then be able to address their problem really well and customize your work to them. Then I think what I've found and what you'll find is that people will pay you really well for that, and you can continue to increase your prices, your fees over time, and that way over time, if you're looking down the road to as we get older, we want to be able to make more and maybe work a bit less and not be so stressed. You know, it can be a really great way to earn a living and not have to, you can over time, cut back on number of clients and be more selective about the clients that you get, be able to work with really quality people. Does that kind of help, Rob?
It does. I guess what I'm really looking for is maybe an example from someone else on the call of what they're charging, when they get a new client in. Just like I said, I don't want to undersell or oversell, so I scare people away. So I guess. I'm just looking for some feedback from anybody who might say, well, first time I got this client, I charged them $100 a session or $300 or whatever. And then that gives me something that I can kind of match it against, so to speak.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, well, why don't we ask everyone, Michelle, are you still on the call? If you want to just...
I'm here, Dr. Joanne.
Okay. I don't know if you're willing to share in each of you, anyone that has information about that. I understand that some people want to keep, some things private, of course, but if you have any information about a ballpark of what you might charge clients?
Yeah, I'm starting at 80, and, I've eventually will go higher, but until I get the experience and, the confidence, I think it's a great number. People are quite thrilled with that number, and they feel like they're getting a lot of value. So it's a win-win, I think, and I feel like I'm getting more clients this way as a result of that pricing. But I'm also not the primary breadwinner in my household, so I'm lucky.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. So thanks, Michelle. That's great for, and that's just across the board kind of thing? 80, or do you charge more for a first session?
No, I do 80, and I find that I'm usually done in about an hour 10, the first session, and then each subsequent session is around 45 minutes. And with each client I've worked with so far, I've booked a minimum of 5 sessions with them. Which has been really good. No, I don't ask for it up front, but they become quite, you know, I don't like to use the word dependent on the process, but it almost feels that way. Like they really want to visit again. There's almost like a slight amount of urgency that they want to have another session. And it's really nice for me to be on that end of things because they're really keen.
Yeah. Wow, that's great. Yeah, that's the position you want to be in is that they really want more sessions from you. And, yeah, that's fantastic. Do anything, Michelle, do anything to help them to want more sessions?
No, I pretty much do everything that you've told us to do, Dr. Joanne, to be honest. And,
you know,
I give them their homework for the week so that they're being mindful about the whole process and they're working on a couple of little things. And then, you know, the start of the second session, we discuss how that's been going. So I'm like an accountability partner to them. And I think that, you know, I really just want to help them with what is most urgent to them. And then they feel a lot of success around that. And then to get them stoked about the next meeting, I'll say, okay, well, next time will it deal with this? And they go, oh, that's cool. Yeah, I want to do that. And then they'll call me back. So I sort of plant the seed for the next session so that they know what to expect.
Yeah.
And then I'm working at this training center in September, and they said to me, you know, what's your rate? And I said 80, and they said, well, we're just going to double that. I said, what? You're going to charge $160 an hour? And they go, yep, and it'll be no problem getting that money. I'm just shocked by this.
They're going to pay you that?
No, they're going to charge, you know, it's a high-performance center. It's pretty, you know, there's a lot of people with very deep pockets. They have many national teams train out of this center in West Vancouver. And
uh-huh.
They basically are, I'm going to be the sports psychology coach on staff. And they said, you just charge what you charge and we will double that fee. And so that they'll be collecting on my services as well.
Yeah, what a great opportunity. Is that for all different sports?
Yeah, they have four national teams that train there, synchro, swimming, I think badminton, tennis, and squash, a lot of racket sports. And then they have a lot of national team athletes or that are trying to get to that level in, you know, there's probably a dozen sports represented at this center.
Wow, that's great. So you're going to be the sports psychology coach on staff, he says?
Yeah. I can use their offices to work with athletes, or I can just continue working in my own office. They'll just do the billing. So it won't affect, there's no compromise on my behalf at all, and I'll hopefully won't have to be continuing with the marketing. I can get more clients easily, you know?
They'll market for you kind of thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that is great. Yeah, fantastic. How did you get that position there? Do you want to share or how that came about?
Oh, I just sent them an email, and I had a link to my website and a couple of articles that I've written, you know, for the newspaper that had been published. So I think it established my credibility, and I heard back from them that day, and they just said that there's a lot of need and desire for sports psychology in, you know, in Vancouver, and they haven't been able to find somebody that is a good fit. So it's like I think what you said earlier about the timing of all of this is it's really good right now, and especially with Rio on the horizon.
So, that's fantastic. That's really an exciting story, a success story for you, Michelle. Yeah. And
yeah, I'm pretty
you,
stoked
Michelle.
About it. Oh, no problem.
Yeah, that's great. So hopefully that's helpful, Rob, too.
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
A good place to start from,
Amy, I don't know if Amy's on the call still or Alex, if you want to share anything about fees.
Hi, it's Amy. I'm charging $100 now, and if I do a workshop, I charge more an hour to the school. But I started at $85, and now I have it at $100. And I kind of, you know, sense who my market is, like who the family is that's coming to me, and
so that's $100 an hour for a client.
Yeah, that's what I'm charging now.
Uh-huh.
And I think I'm ready to raise it a little bit. But it really depends who the person is. If I feel that they are able to pay more, you know, I might just say, if they're starting off fresh, I would say, you know, I charge $125 an hour. But for people that I've had for a long time, I've kept them at the same rate.
Yeah, well, that's great. That's really good to hear. Amy, that's exciting, yeah. And so if it's a workshop, how would you charge for that?
Well, what I did last year is this worked out really well. I decided to approach St. Joe's University and say I'd like to suggest a three-series workshop where I do preseason, mid-season, postseason. And so he brought me in to do that, and I think he paid me $600.
For what? For one workshop?
For a 75-minute workshop. And then this year, he said, I want you to work with them all year. So I'm doing about 7 workshops with them.
And how are you doing that, or how do you charge for that?
So I'm going to price it the same way I did last year, where I would get the same payment. So it would be about closer to like $200 an hour. But that's at a university.
Uh-huh. So that's for a one.
That's for a workshop, working with the men's and women's varsity tennis team at a college.
So it's for one workshop or a series of them?
No, this is going to be for 7. I did 3 this year, and then he wants me to continue working in the fall and then the spring.
Oh, great. So you do 7 workshops and charge $200 for each one?
Yep.
Yeah, great. Yeah. So that'd be like whatever that is. Yeah, $1,400 or something. I'm not good with math. But, yeah, that's great. Fantastic. Thank you for sharing. I appreciate it, Amy. Yeah, and you could do 100 an hour, and wanting to go up to 125 an hour is exciting. And getting 200 an hour for workshops. It's really good to know that,
I did something at an insurance company, and he paid me $500 for an hour and a half. So it just depends where you are.
Yeah. What did you do with them?
I did a workshop with their business team.
Uh-huh.
On, you know, mindset and motivating them, and that was last spring. And it was my husband who's an attorney who said, Amy, this is a business. You got to charge them much more. And so I did, and they didn't even bat an eye at it.
Yeah, it depends on, yeah, if it's a business, a corporation, then, especially insurance companies are, willing to pay a lot and have plenty of funding, so you can charge a lot more kind of thing. So, yeah, that's great.
Dr. Joanne?
Yeah.
It's Michelle here. I was just wondering, Amy, how long are your workshops, the 3 that you talked about, the preseason, midseason, and postseason? Is that...
I did them 75 minutes.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
And you know what? I felt that was a good... It was a good catch. You know, like he said, okay, you know, that sounds good. We'll do the 3. And then I was hoping that this year he would do it again. And then he said, well, I would like to do, you know, we'll do at least 3 in the fall, and we can do 3 or 4 in the spring. So it turned into something. And so now what I'm going to do is I'm going to go to, well, I don't want to overwhelm myself, but I am going to talk to some other colleges and tell them what I'm doing and how well it worked, and this is what I'm doing. It's almost like when you get one, then you feel like you have the credibility to say, this worked out well, this is the format, you know, these are some of the topics I've worked with, it was very helpful for the teams, I'd like to let you know what I'm doing.
Do you happen to have a format of these that you would be willing to share with the group?
A format of the workshops?
Yeah. Like just an outline of what you did, just so that we can have a better idea.
Sure, I could tell. What
you,
I mean, basically, what I did was I talked to the coach about different issues, and then I just came up with my own theme for three. It was my theme was building the foundations of emotional health and wellness for college athletes. That was my theme.
Yeah,
and
great.
So,
yeah.
You know, because, and that was the, getting behind that was making the athlete as a whole a well human being, dealing with them as a person from within and then growing out to the sports psychology techniques, but making sure that they were handling their stress, that they were balanced in their life, that they were, you know, trying to be mindful of different things in their life that needed attention and the things that were working well. But that was my guideline. And then I think one week I did focus, and I did the wheel of focus, and we talked about different areas. And then one time I did mindset, we talked about the growth and six mindsets, and then I did meditations at the end. I think I did something with confidence the other time. So I did a couple different, depending on how far we got with the topics. I mean, sometimes the kids get really engaged and I don't want to cut them off. So I may have planned to do two themes in one session, but we only got to one. So I kind of let it go in the direction of the response that I'm getting and the engagement that I'm getting from the kids.
Okay, thanks.
But
the workshop essentially was you giving a talk about the processes and things and helping them, or was it, you know, doing visualizations or a combination of those? Or
it was a combination. I don't like to just stand up there and lecture them. I always give them handouts, and I always do some type of an exercise with them, and I like to make it so that they're engaged with each other. So many times I'll put them in small groups, and they'll chat about things, and then we'll come back as a whole. I did one of the things was creating a vision, and I told them to sit there with their eyes closed for, you know, 2 or 3 minutes and just really concentrate on, you know, a basic idea of what they want themselves to look like a year from now. What is the vision that they want to see a year from now? And then I made them tell me. So we had a whole thing where everybody talked about, I put them in groups and they told each other what their vision was. And that was a good exercise because they were engaged in it. It wasn't just me talking.
Yeah, that's great. And that's a really good exercise if you're wanting to continue working with people too, either individually or with a group. You write down their ideas of what their vision is, and that tells you kind of what they want and what you can help them with. Kind of thing.
But Dr. Joanne, the response that I'm getting from almost 100% of the dancers and the tennis players that I'm working with is they all are craving mindfulness and meditation. That's what they are really drawn to. That's why I was disappointed that I couldn't get on your calls because I was, you know, working there during the summer. But that's really what they want. And so that's what I'm going to focus on more. And I think
yeah,
the topic
great.
Of your talk is really interesting.
Oh, good. Yeah. So I'm. I'll get those other recordings up early today with the last couple calls I did here too, and then and then this talk I'm doing at the Commonwealth Club. That'll be September 15th. So in a month from now, you can. It'll be the recording. Will be up there at commonwealthclub.org. You can just search on my name, and it'll be up there too. So, and it may be covered by National Public Radio. Sometimes they pick it up, so it may be on the radio too. But I'll let you know, and so I'll send you a link for it.
How long is that talk going to be?
Well, there's another person talking for 20 minutes first. It's a panel, just myself and another professor. He's talking for 20 minutes on the research and science of meditation and effects on the brain. And he'll talk for the first 20 minutes, and then I talk for the second 20 minutes on the practical side and how exercises and how to use it, different types of meditation. And then another 20 minutes of question and answer kind of thing. So if you have any questions, too, that you have for me on it, I'd be happy to, I could actually answer those on the, in my, you know, in that talk as well as here, you know, too. I'm going to have friends of mine going there, so I could give them your question to answer, to ask kind of thing. But do you have any questions now or anything about that, or we can talk more?
About the mindfulness meditation?
Yeah.
I think all these kids want to learn how to relax their minds and calm their brains down. And I do these meditations at the end with them, but I am looking for more specific things that I can go into it a little bit deeper, because in reality, it's only 5-10 minutes of what we're doing, and they're really craving it. Every evaluation I get is, I want more of the mindfulness, and I want more of the meditation, just about from every single person. And so,
yeah.
You know, I'm listening to that, but I'm not trained in that. You know, I'm not trained in mindfulness or meditation. So I'm just kind of winging it.
So we can talk more about it next time too, because I even though we covered the topic somewhat, but because I'm giving this talk coming up, I'm going into the topic deeper, and I've come up with even some other types of meditation and other things that people can do too. So but I know we're almost on 2 hours here of time today. It's a little bit, can't really cover all that today, but let's talk about it on our next call here on the 27th too. We can do, you know, confidence and mindfulness meditation. That'd be okay.
That'd be great.
Yeah, and I think because I'm sort of developing these other exercises too right now, so that'd be great. Yeah, Alex, I don't know if you're still there. If you had any comments on fees or anything too. Not sure if he's still there, but he might have been gone because it's been almost 2 hours here. But anyway, yeah, hopefully that's great. I'm so glad that all of you could contribute to EMSL and Amy and, to help answer with Rob's question. And hopefully that's helpful for you, Rob, to kind of get an idea.
Yes, it is. Thank you very much for everybody who shared.
Yeah, thank you, Rob. That's a great question. Yeah, and it's really nice to, you know, that in this kind of environment we can, you know, have this kind of open conversation about it, and really willing to share. Yeah, so, you know, people started to get information about the money part and fees and that sort of thing. But it's great to know that you guys are, you're charging $100 an hour and stuff, and Michelle $80, and that it gives us confidence. You know, we're talking about confidence as coaches too, to be able to charge what you're worth here, and know that people are paying that. I think it's all about just showing them the value and having them try you out, you know, for even try one session, and then once they see how the value that you can offer, then they'll still want to continue with you. So great. Adriana, are you still on the call? don't know, she may have left because she had a, I think she was, that's exciting. She's actually working with that client that's going for her, the weightlifting nationals right now at 11 o'clock. I think she says it's the qualifier for the world, so in weightlifting. So that's really exciting, too. We've got some people that are right on our call here that are able to work with the highest level athletes, too. So no matter what level you're working at, it's, you know, you can have an assortment of people just working with people who are top level and just, but, you know, I do that, but the majority of my athletes are, you know, just general folks that, you know, high school and college athletes or adults that want to, just want to improve. And that's your kind of meat, bread and butter, they say, meat and potatoes, people that want to improve. So, great. Well, thanks, everyone, for being on the call. If you have any other questions, feel free to email me. This is a great discussion. I'm so glad that everybody could join us here. Adriana and Rob and Alex and Michelle. And next time, put on your calendar the August 27th, and we'll, at the same time, we'll talk more then. So, okay, in the meantime, I'll send you that self-confidence assessment that I have, too. So, anyone, do you want to just quickly say, those of you that are on the call, what was most helpful for you today? What nuggets did you like to take away from this call? Anyone can jump in?
This is Rob. The most important thing is my question about the fees for me, because I'm starting out and want to make sure I got it right, so I appreciate it very much.
Okay, great. Yeah, thanks. Yeah, Michelle or Amy?
For me, going into more of what I can do with these teams, the different confidence exercises.
Okay, good, yeah. Michelle, I'm not sure she's still on the call.
Yeah, for me, I enjoyed the whole topic or discussion, and one line in particular that you said to Adriana about keeping that practice mindset, I thought was really helpful for people that might be, you know, feeling very stressed or nervous about a major competition, to just put that mindset into play. It helps calm their nerves and give them more confidence.
Yeah, great, yeah. It's practice mindset, and remind everyone that your athletes are, no matter what level of competition you're in, it's always practice for the next one. So we're always practicing for what's coming next. So great. Okay, well, thanks, everyone, and we'll talk to you next time on the 27th. Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye now.
Bye.